weekly sample of The Wacky, The Warped, and The Weird was produced by Snarf Dude and Daffodil, but was originally created by Snarf Dude and Moondog for Scottsdale and Productions. Drop by the website anytime online at www.chezepleeze.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
Every little thing that we do it for you. That is right. It's for you. As a radio programmer, I make radio with you in mind, and I'm so grateful that you're here listening. I'm Danny Nesvadarani, community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. You can hear me on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays on Speak Up. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
This is Bird Note. Ayukwe nikichu. Neknau Tiana Williams Klassen, Esipulik Neme. I am a Yurok tribal member from the village of Wexquo. My home is in northwestern California, where the Klamath River meets the Pacific Ocean, and in the mountains and the beautiful coastlines here. The Yurok people have co-evolved with this region as both caretakers and recipients of its bounties. Yurok and surrounding tribes are deeply connected with our traditional lands. But that relationship was profoundly damaged after the California Gold Rush. Yurok were forced off of our land, which was then managed for extraction. This caused many casualties. Preganish, or California condor, was driven locally extinct. Ecologically, as scavengers, condors are the ultimate environmental cleanup crew. Culturally, Preganish ties closely to local tribal obligations as world renewal people. Preganish carries our prayers for the world to be in balance. Our elders have long been committed to restoring Preganish to Yurok ancestral territory, and it has been the focus of my entire career. The Yurok tribe has forged a partnership with the National Park Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to bring condors back home. I'm happy to say that my 4-year-old daughter will grow up with condors in her sky. In May 2022, after more than a century, the first condors flew free in Yurok country. We are bringing Preganish, a member of our community, back home. For Bird Note, this is Tiana Williams Klassen.
Welcome back to Flex Your Head, another special episode of Scream Therapy. On Flex Your Head, we take a breather from punk rock and mental health and explore classic punk albums, which I guess is good for mental health. All right, on this episode, I'm joined once again by Drew Swalwell. How's it going, Drew?
It is going fantastic.
Nice. It's going to be fun to talk about this album today. So what album are we talking about?
We are talking about Bikini Kill's first full-length album, Pussy Whipped.
So Bikini Kill's Pussy Whipped came out in October 1993 on Kill Rock Stars out of Olympia, Washington, and it was their debut studio album. The band formed in 1990, broke up in 1997, so this album was kind of right in the middle of that time span. The band is consisting of singer-songwriter Kathleen Hanna, guitarist Billy Caron, a.k.a. Billy Boredom, bassist Kathy Wilcox, and drummer Toby Vale. And Kathy and Toby do a bit of vocals as well on the album. So first off, Drew, do you know how long this album is?
I think it's only 25 minutes long or something like that.
26 minutes. So
yeah,
good one. So 12 songs, most of the songs with that calculation right around the 2-minute mark. I know there's a lot to tackle here in the lyrics and messages of the band, you know, obviously very influential. band for all people in Olympia and Washington, D.C. Young women were very inspired by them, and they were quite connected to Riot Girl movement. It's a little bit awkward to talk too much about the Riot Girl stuff because it's not really, I don't have that perspective coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, this is, for me, the penultimate Bikini Kill album.
Well, I'm a little curious. When did you come across Bikini Kill? What was your first introduction to Bikini Kill?
It was this album.
Was it this album? Yeah.
Sometimes I go in, and this is what we did back in the day before the internet. We go in and just buy things based on the record label and the name of the band. And I don't think I fully knew what was going on until I actually heard it. I was very stoked. I know that this one and Heavens to Betsy were the two albums that really went as a 1-2 punch during that era for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure I heard something about the band from people in the Vancouver scene. That's where I was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was friends with some of the folks that formed Riot Girl Vancouver, so that was maybe a way in for some of these bands. Yeah, how about you?
In my research, I went down memory lane. The Kill Rockstars comp, I bought it because Unwound had a song on there. Bikini Kill's Feels Blind was on there, along with Heavens to Betsy's My Red Self.
Oh, the Stars Kill Rock compilation is out.
Yeah. I remember coming across it being like, oh, okay, this, then I want to like explore this. So I probably went down to Ditch Records and picked up Bikini Kill on CD pretty quick after that. I really identified with the politics behind the album, especially this album. There's a few songs here where the struggle is just absolutely real. And you can hear it in her voice and the way the songs are portrayed.
Totally agree. One of the things that I read, Kathleen Hanna, the vocalist, was talking to Tidal, of all places, talking about the range of emotions on the album in her vocals. And she said, I didn't really have that many effects on my voice during most of the recording. I want women to hear my voice how it really is without making it sound all beautiful and whatever. I want them to hear someone who sounds pissed off. That just nails it in a nutshell there. I mean, the whole album sounds really pissed, you know, musically and vocally. And that's what I love most about it. When I was younger, and even now, I'm searching for things that are very challenge me. You know, and I've heard all kinds of music now that's challenged me in different ways. But this one challenged me in a way that was very self-reflective and made me think about myself and my own actions and how I perceive the world and, you know, how I treat other people. And that, to me, was such a lesson for me to have, especially when I was in my early 20s. And I was always so stoked to put this on and just be like, okay, here we go. Like, I'm going to work on this. Like, you know, I'm going to be schooled. Messages around street harassment, sexual abuse. Like, these were things that were, you know, not talked about as much in music, if at all, even in the punk scene.
Going into the politics of it, I think that's where, you know, they got a lot of pushback from the hardcore scene, playing music that's basically hardcore, but speaking about things that weren't being spoken about for women. Women weren't supposed to be yelling as much as a Bikini Kill were, or Heavens to Betsy, or...
On this album, they found such a groove in the fact that they are all angry sounding and just punchy in the guts kind of sound. And
yeah.
Even with just the vocals, the way that the vocals sound, such a blow, you know, it's like, whoa, this is amazing.
Yeah. There's a power in Kathleen's voice that while she's doing the hardcore thing, there's a melody to her screams.
I mean, the thing about the album is it's unrelenting, first of all. It moves at such a pace, but there's so much going on with the interplay between the musicians, the bassist and the drummer. Kathy Wilcox and Toby Vail are just locked into this really cool syncopated stagger step through most of the album. Billy's guitar playing is just, if Greg Ginn didn't care about being a stoner, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I think he probably was influenced by Justin from Unwound, I would think. But just the angular, distorted feedback, he's not coming out and being like, hey, I'm the guy. Like, I'm going to be the person that's just like wailing away. He very much sits back, and even live footage I saw, he kind of hangs back a little bit. But just what he fills, the sound that he fills in, I love the guitar playing.
Yeah.
Kathleen's vocals are just super, like, amazing. And I love the rhythm section. Let's just listen to guitar. It's a little bit back in the mix. Let's just, and there's so much cool stuff going on with this guy's guitar playing.
There's almost so much riffage. You lose the fact that he's just constantly throwing in these different riffs in there. Yeah. And he lets Toby and Kathy take all the rhythm on it. I mean, they made a good choice. And if they're going to choose a male to be part of this band, they did a good job of finding that male personality who would sit back. Yeah, and you're right. He often is kind of in the dark off to the side of the stage playing, as opposed to being like right up front. He was smart to understand to like step back.
The album was recorded in Seattle at Avast Studio, which is Stuart Halloran's studio since 1990. And he also went to Evergreen College in Olympia, so I'm assuming that's where they all met. If you look at his list of the bands that he produced, it's pretty much every punk band from Pacific Northwest Underground in that era. 215 releases, everything from Fits of Depression to Unwound. In fact, I think this album was recorded either right before or right after an Unwound record, so he was definitely in that mode at the time. It actually sold 75,000 copies, which I think at the time was pretty big. I mean, I think Fugazi sold maybe 150,000 of their Steady Diet of Nothing, so it's up there.
It's totally up there. It's interesting that you like bring in the Fugazi, because there is like such a mass connection between Olympia and Washington. Ian actually produced the first tape that Bikini Kill did. You can definitely, especially after this album, you start to see more of the Washington influence starting to creep into the rhythms of the band.
And to me, this is Bikini Kill's the minor threat of the 90s. They're one of the bands that I would immediately associate with a band like Minor Threat. Different set of outlooks and opinions, but it's that same energy. It's that same, fuck you, this is what we're going to do. We're going to play fast. We're going to play as loud as we can, and we're going to spit in your face, and you're going to deal with it. And I was just happy that I was privy to that, and I actually learned from it.
Yeah.
Let's get into some of the songs. 12 songs, like I said. There's splitting up of the vocals. Kathy has like one song called Speedheart where she sings, and Toby has a couple of songs where she sings, Tell Me So and Hamster Baby. Anything stand out for you right away?
I always thought this album takes a little bit to really get going. I didn't think that the full power really hits until Magnet. The beginning of that one, that's where I started to take notice of this album. I was like, oh, this is going to be very intense. Obviously, Rebel Girl is probably one of their biggest hits.
Oh, it's got to be their biggest hit. Yeah, hit. It actually is a hit.
It's the one that gets played in movies. Side two with Sugar, it's a smart move to put that song right at the beginning. Tell Me So kind of like is a softer song. It kind of fades away at the end of side one. And then you're right back into hard-hitting during Sugar.
I was always partial to Sugar, Lil Red, and then Starbelly Boy, just like ramping right up with Kathleen's vocals. Those are the three songs that I always loved. They're venomous. But, you know, after listening to it over the last couple weeks here, I really love the whole album. I love the stuff where Kathy and Toby sing on.
Yeah.
You know, the whatever it is.
Yeah.
I love the slower songs. The last song for Tammy Ray is really good. It's the longest song, 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
The whole thing kicks ass. There's nothing on here that I would skip past. Whereas when I was a kid, I would flick to like Little Red and Sugar and Starbelly Boy and the ones that really cranked it up as a middle-aged person. It's like I listened to the whole thing and I'm happy to listen to the whole thing. It's an amazing album.
It has a nice ebb and flow to it. If it was all bangers and rippers, it'd be too much. I think it would lose some of the breath of the album. This one breathes. They give you chances to take the album in. I was immediately drawn to the faster, harder songs to start out with. As time has gone by, like I'll listen to this album at least every other week or something like that, if not every week, a turn on the table.
I'm thinking of the iconic stomp in Rebel Girl, that almost like militant beat and how it comes in with that boom, right?
Yeah.
Imagine being in the jam space when they're writing this song, just hearing that riff for the first time. So good. They must have known as soon as, you know, getting into that riff, okay, this is the song. I wouldn't be surprised if the first few jams of Bikini Kill were more that kind of beat happening. I know Bratmobile was a lot more like that. They were a lot more garagey. You know, when you have someone like Kathleen who can just scream her face off, why are you going to ask her to do, like, oh, just be a little more quiet and do some garagey vocals here and let's keep it a clean sound. Not only that, but to say that her vocals are just screechy is totally underselling it. I mean, she has that beautiful melodic voice. She has the powerful, like, almost a baritone through a megaphone. She's got the different characters she slips into, you know, like she parodies or takes a piss out of Grosso guys.
She does put on these characters throughout the album, which they definitely thought a lot harder about their albums. And they, each one was like really thought out, even for the minute and a half song. Everything's very, very thought out.
There's a funny quote that I read on Tidal again. They'd interviewed Kathleen for the 25th anniversary of this album, actually. In regards to her vocals, she said, I had to stand in there and listen to them soloing my vocals. And I was just like, someone point me in the direction of a fucking guillotine. Get into this studio and you got to listen to your isolated vocals, and they sound great to the music, but just hearing all that in isolation is just tough to handle sometimes.
For me personally, it's the worst. I absolutely hate having to pick out which vocal works best, because I'm like, none of them, you know. But they work in the context of the song, but man, hearing your vocals solo, so it's interesting to hear that even somebody like Kathleen, who has such a powerful grasp on her voice, she has a hard time with it.
Let's talk a little bit about the lyrics. One of the things that stuck out for me was, obviously it's easy to look at the lyrics that are to do with misogyny and street harassment and sexual assault and just complete discrimination against women in the punk scene. But I looked at some of the other stuff. This one's really cool. The song Starfish, which is quite a short song, and has Kathleen playing bass, actually. And it's just like a little fuck you to the mainstream media, which I really like the poetry behind this. So she says, just like a starfish, my legs will soon grow back. I'll just be 10 times stronger each time that you attack. Rhyming couplets like that. They're known for their very, like, in-your-face lyrics, which is great, but it's nice to know there's other little subtle bits in there as well.
Yeah, I always think about the lyrics to Feels Blind when it comes to Bikini Kill. All the doves that fly past my eyes have a stickiness to their wings. Like, it just, there's something about those, the way that she's able to take something really beautiful and then, like, kind of look at it a little bit deeper and see it's not all beautiful. Like,
yeah, the beauty and the darkness together.
Yeah. There are the songs where she's setting up her, commanding the audience or the listener, but then there are slower songs where she's able to paint these pictures. It's incredibly talented, and she's got a very introspective way of looking at the world around her.
They're funny too. I mean, there's some stuff in there where she's just making fun of, like I said before, Grosso guys. It's not necessarily to laugh at, but it's very sarcastic, and I like that. But also on Toby's song Hamster Baby, I just love how it's like a music industry sort of ha-ha, snarky kind of thing. Hello, 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 hello. Where is our next show? In Honolulu. Who is going to put in our tape deck? Who is going to carry the bass amp? Who is going to buy us the van? I could be you. I could be you. I could be you. It will come true. I guess the most famous lyric on this album is, she thinks she's the queen of the neighborhood. I got news for you. She is.
Yeah.
That's the one they're going to sing along to, right? Rebel Girl was actually recorded 3 times. So they kept trying at it. So it was on the split LP with Huggy Bear. And then the Joan Jett recorded one on the B-side of the New Radio 7-inch.
Yeah.
And then the Pussy Whipped version, which I think the Pussy Whipped version for me is the best. It's dirtier, the production's better. Well, better.
Yeah.
Production's better slash worse, which is my thing. I think it has the most punch. I like the Joan Jett version because when they do the soundtracks, I bet you $100 that they do the Joan Jett version, right? But
I would guarantee it, yeah.
That it was a song that stuck around for them too.
It's absolutely a call to arms for that movement. I've never seen Bikini Kill, so I would only assume that the reception to that song was fantastic.
Lots of good live footage of it. I haven't seen them live either.
I'm due to see them in September, so
nice.
I will make this happen.
I might be there with you.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yes.
So are you ready for some YouTube comments?
I did kind of look at some of these.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of misogyny in some of these ones, so.
Actually, this is kind of an interesting discussion, and we'll kind of maybe let the comments themselves create the discussion, but who should have an opinion about this band and what that opinion should be and how do you delicately maneuver around that? And so this first person, this guy's not delicate. Quite an interesting train of thought here. So his name is Hapworth, username, and it's from 22 years ago. So that actually made a lot to do with how strange this is. But he says, first off, as a male, I have to admit that I don't even feel comfortable sharing my opinion. One of the things that makes Bikini Kill such a brilliant band is the fact that they probably wouldn't even trust my opinions. Darned right they shouldn't. Yes, as a male I can offer praise and encourage people to buy this fine record, but Kathleen Hanna and company would almost certainly dismiss my praise completely, or at least highly distrust it. Like other female rockers who followed in Bikini Kill's wake, Hanna sings openly and honestly about the world she lives in. She knows, for instance, that no matter how much critical acclaim she receives from male reviewers, males simply can't divorce female artistry from female sexuality. Every male, and those who claim otherwise are lying, myself included, not myself, himself, may value and truly admire what Bikini Kill is contributing, but at the same time, every male is also thinking, boy, that Hanna sure is angry, but she's also kind of cute. I don't agree with this guy at all. Like, I think he's away. He's in his own world here, but I guess the reason why I chose that one is because I think we both talked about having some reservations about doing this album. You know, do two guys have a place to talk about it? And I think we definitely do.
Yeah.
But I think this person hits on all the reasons why we should talk about it, saying that, you know, all males think we don't have an opinion about it. The band would never respect it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the words I'm looking for, it can be a bit of a landmine for two dudes to talk about this album because it can be an inherent rock critic than to start talking about looks and gender. I spent a lot of time in the last like couple of weeks as we were prepping for this, trying to make this album as genderless as possible. But
that's not what
this album is. A celebration of the female gender. So it's a weird one.
This guy wants to have an opinion. He's afraid to voice his opinion because he doesn't think that they're going to respect it. He doesn't want to say his opinion on the record. He doesn't say, oh, this is a really good record. I love the guitars on this. I love the vocals. It's just kind of more about him navigating his own guilt around having an opinion about the band, which I think is totally stupid. There are three responses to this, not responses to him, but responses in what he's saying. And one of them is from Alteriga, and it's 2 years ago. And it just says, punk's not for girls. Punk's not for boys. Punk's for the listener. Punk's for everyone. I like that one. I mean, it's a bit naive, you know, and a bit, you know, it's not really taking into the account to the world's complications. But I think the heart's in the right place for that one. And then also this one is Matthew Morey, 2 years ago. Unconditional love and learning between everyone and all of existence. We are held back by fear and only liberated through unconditional love. That just sounds like a yoga instructor or something, but I think I get what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
And I love this one. This is, I think, the only woman that I chose for a comment, but it's just pure honesty, getting to the point. The way that I picture people listening to this band back in the day and finding them and being so stoked. So all it says is, Therese Drew 4 years ago, There is one copy of this album at the Vinnies near me, probably the last copy sold in Australia. Tomorrow I go out to see if I can get this before anyone else. I'll update you when I do. It's just about the process of getting the album. What's not stated there, what's read between the lines, is like, I'm really stoked to get this. I can't wait to hear it. I'll let you know when I've got it. Like, I want to share this with you. That, to me, seems like the way we should go with an album like this. You know, it's pointed and loaded in some ways, but to me, it's just a great album. It needs to be listened to. It needs to be appreciated for what it is. And by focusing on the lyrics only, I think you're really just shortchanging yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It is just a straight rocker all the way through. And there are a lot of comments like that in there. It's like of men and women just saying that this is just a full rocking album. There's a couple in there that are, you know, there's one here I was just reading. Music interests and appreciation changes as per your geographical location. No offense, I'm from India. I'm like, how could human species listen to this kind of music? It just tears my soul apart.
I think that person's mistaken that having your soul torn apart is a bad thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's a few comments like that.
That's what I'm looking for.
I think that's one of the important things about this album, this genre of music, in the sense of like Riot Girl, because it all sounds totally different, is that especially being someone who identifies as male, it really challenges my concept of what being a male is. And I think it made me a better person to dig into these lyrics and be like, oh, okay, I now understand what I can change, how I interact with the world, and especially with people who identify as female. This album probably changed my life more than any album that I can think of.
It's funny because we talked about trying to not veer away from, but maybe not focus so much on the issue of it being, you know, Riot Girl and it being an album that was a clarion call for third wave feminism. But the fact that we talked about it and felt like we had to talk about it just further proves that the album is a masterpiece of punk rock, because punk rock's all about challenging perceptions and it's all about learning and growing. And this album was that for, it sounds like, both of us. We owe it a lot. I know that I feel that way.
Yeah. The other album we were sort of talking about, doing a Sleater-Kinney album, this album led me directly to Sleater-Kinney, which further moved my psyche and what it means to be a male coming into the 2000s, you know, and moving forward into my life. And it's important to be challenged. This is definitely one of the albums that challenged me a lot.
Make sure that you get a chance to go over to the Scream Therapy website, ScreamTherapyHQ.com, and you can check out the Scream Therapy podcast episodes dealing with punk rock and mental health, episodes about different diagnoses, different mental health professionals, different musicians in their lives living with mental health conditions. So yeah, check that out. It's a fun one. Well, maybe not as fun as this one is. Scream Therapy episodes are educational and have really affected me as a host. So go and check those out. You can find both of them, Scream Therapy and Flex Your Head, at ScreamTherapyHQ.com. Drew, it's been amazing to have you once again. It's always a fun time to sit down with you and talk about these albums. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. There are plenty more records out there that need to be discussed. Thanks for having me again. When you asked me to do this album, I felt really lucky. This album's a big one. I know it's a big one for both of us.
Let's get into the last bit of this album, Bikini Kill's 1993 punk classic, Pussy Whipped.
It's so awesome that you are here on the other end of the radio. You are why we are here on the dial. A radio station is nothing without its listeners, and that includes you. Thank you for tuning your ears to our broadcast signal.